Hello, my name is Clayton, and welcome to another episode of the Watch Dog Podcast. Ooh, that was a weak one. I'm a professional dog runner and watch enthusiast talking to his pals about dogs and watches. How is everybody doing? Thank you so much for listening. You know, I appreciate it. We're at episode 77. Now, while that seems like a lot of podcasts, later this month is the 3-year anniversary of the Watchdog Podcast, started in June of 2020. So 77 is a pretty large number, but considering I should be at around 150, 160 episodes right now, it's pretty sad. So missed a lot of weeks, but I'm looking forward to delivering podcasts every Saturday afternoon. That's typically when you'll get them, Saturday afternoon in the United States and the Eastern time zone, depending on when I get it edited. That's been great. Give you something to listen to during the weekend, chores, road trips, whatever it might be. And I appreciate you taking me along, whatever you're doing, wherever you're going. It means a great deal to me. I know I promised a guest this week and going forward, but you know, scheduling conflicts. It's hard for me to record during the week, especially in the evenings. I get an early start to my day, and by 7, 8, 9 p.m. on a weeknight, I am toast. And I want to make sure I have energy, not only for the guests to do right by them, but also to do right by you. So, just couldn't make it work this week. So you're getting another solo episode. I'll try to make it fun. I'll try to make it entertaining. But yes, I can promise now, going forward for the next several weeks, probably the next 5 or 6 episodes will be with very fun guests, some old returning friends, and hopefully some new guests, some new voices you haven't heard before. So looking forward to all of it. And fair warning, I have 3 very noisy dogs who are watching me record right now. Lots of pressure, lots of eyes on me, 6 eyes on me right now as I record. They have no respect for the red record light when it goes on. So if you hear any snoring, scratching, whatever the case might be, it's my dogs. I love them just the same. But the cruel joke is, on a normal morning when I'm not recording with a very sensitive microphone, they will sleep in with my wife until like 9 a.m. But nope, when I get up early to record a podcast, they are all here with me making any variety of noises. So if you hear them, just try to tune it out. So before getting into the main topic today, I want to chat about something that's been on my mind recently. And my friend and Watch Soup co-host Bobby Legs has done some content around this recently, and that is the idea of what it means to be a watch enthusiast versus a watch collector, right? Which one are you, and what on earth does that even mean? Now, I've always fancied myself more as an enthusiast than a collector, mainly because I don't love owning a bunch of watches. I've been there, done that, it stresses me out, and I've never been more content in the hobby than I am right now with the, you know, few watches in rotation, namely the Air King and the Moser, which I'm going to talk about later on in the episode. I've tried the collecting thing, Seiko Divers, Analog Digital, and after a while, I just get stressed out and I sell them all, mostly for a big loss. But lately, I've been thinking about going down the collecting rabbit hole once again, namely with vintage Seiko quartz. Now, this has been something that I've been stewing on for about a year, which is, you know, pretty uncommon with me. I'm very impulsive, as I've said many, many times on the podcast, right? I am an impulsive buyer. I don't think about it too much. If I see something and I have the money, I go for it. Life's too short, right? But with this, I've taken my time for a few different reasons. As I start to know myself after 4 years in this hobby, I do know that I like having a smaller collection, only a handful of watches that are worn regularly. B, vintage is very scary to me, right? You have to make sure you're buying from a reputable source. There's a whole lot of shenanigans that goes on in the vintage market, especially if you're buying from eBay or from private sellers. I've even heard of the eBay authentication process missing redialed Seiko Pogues and all of this. So it's just, it's a scary, scary world. So for all these reasons, I've just been hesitant to get in. And I've sort of been researching it, been reading all about Grand Quartz, King Quartz, you know, the very finely adjusted VFA, 7003, all of these amazing historical Seiko Quartz references. But it's one of those things where I thought, you know, maybe ownership is overrated. Maybe I can appreciate them and learn about them without actually having to buy one, right? Vintage is such a minefield. I'm so nervous of it. But then recently I've been infatuated with the first analog quartz chronograph ever, the Seiko 7A28 and all of its variations, so many different models with this movement. And, you know, they've come up on DC Vintage in the past. You know, this is the Ripley. This is the movement in the Ripley, the Bishop, the models from the Alien franchise, right? James Bond, Roger Moore in A View to a Kill wore the 7A28-7020. The Royal Air Force in the UK issued some of these, RAF. So this is pretty real deal quartz movement. They were, you know, most quartz movements are disposable, right? If you send a quartz watch in for a service, they're not going to fix the movement. They're going to toss it in the bin and just put a brand new one in. These were actually designed to be serviced. There's no plastic parts in these whatsoever. 15 jewels. Now, I'm not really a chronograph guy, but if I am going to buy a chronograph, it's going to be quartz. Sorry to all the purists out there. I don't love mechanical or automatic chronographs. The only manual wind chronograph experience was the Speedmaster, the 3861. Now, I seem to be the only person on earth who has had a problem with this. I have a couple friends who have this model right now, and they say it winds buttery smooth. Mine fought me. For every full turn, it unwound halfway. I've had manual wind watches in the past, my Weiss. I have a 1940s Gruen Curvex that's manual wind. It's a joy to wind those. The Speedmaster, not so much. I moved that watch on, and it's kind of turned me off from the Speedmaster. Maybe I just got a bad one. I don't know. I know with the previous movement, the 1861, 1861, those were notoriously bad for winding. Just an unpleasant sensation. But I had it with the 3861 too. So give me a Quartz, Mecha Quartz, Breitling, Endurance Pro, Super Quartz, whatever it might be. Even the Moon Swatch. Is it sad that I've connected with the Moon Swatch more than the Moon Watch? Probably. Maybe I'm not even qualified to have a watch podcast anymore. But anyway, so, you know, over the years, I've seen various models and variations of the 7A28 on DC Vintage and other trusted sites, but I've never pulled the trigger until last week. Hub City Vintage. I don't know if you're familiar with this website. They occasionally, they don't have regular watches on their website. They will do a drop of about 6 or 7 watches and they'll announce it and they'll give a brief description. They'll announce it on their Instagram page. And then when they go live on the website, I mean, these, they sell out. I mean, instantly. The last drop was last week. They had a Seiko Pogue. They had a few other models. But then I noticed they had a 7A28-7069, a variation of this chronograph that I'd never seen before. And that always piques my interest. It's actually titanium, has like a black and gilt colorway. These are integrated bracelet watches too. So, you know, if you want to get into integrated bracelets, but you don't want to jump on the trends, you know, the Christopher Ward 12 and the PRX, you know, consider vintage 7A28. You know, they're doing it differently, something a little different, but still you get that integrated bracelet aesthetic, right? So I had never seen this one. And, you know, I actually forgot about Hub City's drop. And so I went on there about an hour after all these watches dropped, and 5 of the 6 they released sold out. The only one that didn't sell out was the one I was most interested in, the 7A28-7069. I'll put a link to the Hub City post in the show notes. And I watched it for a few days. It didn't sell. And after doing even more research, the Spring Bar website does a fantastic synopsis of these 7A28 models. I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. They are a fantastic resource if you want to learn about vintage Seiko. I mean, tremendous. They have a great article on the Pogue as well. Everything you wanted to know about the Pogue. And I suggest reading these types of things before you dive into vintage watches, especially vintage Seiko, because so much trickery out there, as I said. So I went for it. After about 3 days of it being live, and they actually dropped the price by $50 too, because I don't think Hub City is used to watches sitting there. I've never seen a watch sit for a couple days, but it did. So it went from $625 to $575. Now, this is a PVD coated watch as well, and it's 40 years old. It was released in 1983. So, you know, PVD technology has come a long way. Back then, it was in its infant stages, so a lot of it rubs off, you know, and they even say in their listing for this watch that they have rejected several opportunities to bring this watch to their website because the condition was just poor. They brought this one to their website because all of the PVD coating is intact for the most part. And that's one of the things you want to look for in vintage watches, right? it's so weird to me. It's a weird world because on one hand, we don't want polished or refurbished vintage watches. But on the other hand, we say condition, condition, condition. So what is it? I'm so confused about vintage watches and why it's one of the reasons why I've just sort of stayed away. Because I don't know what the hell I'm looking for. But I'm really excited to get this watch. It comes in today. Now, this is a model line, the 7A28 Movement Series, that I could see myself collecting and not feel a tremendous amount of guilt if I didn't wear them all the time. This scratches an itch for me. you know, as someone who loves quartz, who doesn't necessarily love chronographs per se, but this movement was groundbreaking, right? The first analog quartz chronograph. And it's a real deal movement. These watches can be serviced. This one is freshly serviced. This is not a throwaway. It's the original movement that came in the watch 40 years ago. No plastic parts whatsoever. This movement is far better than what you will find in modern quartz watches. Fight me, I don't care. For the most part, we're not talking, you know, high accuracy quartz or anything like that. But, you know, if you buy a quartz chronograph today, give me the 7A28 any day of the week over what you'll find in modern watches. So I'm excited about this. I'm wondering if this is going to enable me to become a collector, because I'm so content with my regular rotation of the Air King and the Moser that I feel like I can, now I'm just at a better place to maybe start a sub-collection of vintage quartz watches. Now, I think I will move into the different variations. Now, there's the Ripley, the Bishop, all these other watches, the RAF, military-issued watches. There's just a lot of variety here and a lot of fun places I can go down this rabbit hole. And then there's also, yeah, the Grand Quartz, the King Quartz. So I'm excited. I get it in the mail today, and if I connect with it, I could maybe be both. Can you be both? Can you be an enthusiast? I think I'll be a luxury watch enthusiast, right? Because it's cost prohibitive for me to buy a lot of luxury watches. But I think I can also be a collector of vintage Seiko quartz. So we'll see how it goes. I'll keep you updated and I'll give you my initial thoughts on the next episode. So on to the main topic for today's episode. And that is comparing ownership of a Rolex Air King versus my Moser Endeavor Center Seconds Concept Dial. And mainly just what it's like to own both brands. Because to the uninitiated, the regular person, Rolex is the pinnacle of wealth and success, right? Many, many decades of amazing marketing has gotten Rolex to that point. Versus Moser, which the average person has never heard of, but to the watch enthusiast, that is the pinnacle of, I don't know about wealth and success. Listen, I have no business owning either of these brands, right? I'm just a humble dog runner. But it just shows you what hard work and determination can do, because I have no business owning either of them, but I own both of them. So you can too, right? But that's not what this is all about. But I didn't want to go about comparing them in the, you know, boring spec versus spec sort of method. I wanted to do it in a little bit more of an unconventional way, and a little bit, and in a way that is just more me. So that is just going to be the way they make me feel. We're not going to go over specs too much. You can look all that up on their respective websites. Just the way they make me feel. But also, we're going to use one of the biggest disruptors in recent memory, artificial intelligence. ChatGPT. What is ChatGPT? It's a chatbot. Basically, you type in something. Say you want to write a paper, and this is where it's getting very scary, because we're going to have a generation of dumb kids, right? And these poor teachers. Like, being a teacher wasn't hard enough. Now you have to worry about whether your students are just plagiarizing everything from ChatGPT. So say you want to write a paper on, I don't know, the Revolutionary War. You can type Revolutionary War into ChatGPT, and it will essentially give you a term paper on it. And, you know, these poor teachers now, they have to figure out. A friend sent me an article, I think it was a university, a professor failed some students because he was convinced they wrote their papers based on ChatGPT. He asked ChatGPT if these papers were generated on it, and it said yes. Only problem is, it's not set up to detect that. There are other chatbots that can detect if something was created using artificial intelligence. It's a world I'm not familiar with at all. This is actually my first experience using it, really. It's scary stuff. I don't even need to own any of these watches, right? I can just, you know, I want to say I own a Grubel Forsey. What's that like? Put it into ChatGPT and there you go. And I could do a podcast on it. You don't know me. I live in an online world. I can say I own Grubel Forsey, and then I do. You don't know any better. It's scary. I actually, just to have fun with it, just to get us started here, I typed into ChatGPT a podcast about Rolex and Moser, and it gave me the outline of a podcast. It even gave it a name, Time Talk. Here's what it spit back at me when I put a podcast about Rolex and Moser into ChatGPT. It says, introduction, background music, then host. Welcome to Time Talk, the ultimate podcast for watch enthusiasts. In today's episode, we delve into the fascinating worlds of Rolex and Moser, two prestigious Swiss watch brands that have captivated the industry and collectors alike. Join us as we explore the rich history, iconic models, and innovative craftsmanship that make Rolex and Moser exceptional timepieces. I'm your host and horology aficionado, Clayton Roth, and this is Time Talk. Way better than I do, right? There's not going to be a need for humans. And we're talking the first year of ChatGPT. Imagine what it's going to be able to do. And even people like Elon Musk are warning against the dangers of it. So you know we're screwed. We're screwed. Oh, gosh. Part of me wishes I was like 85 years old right now. But the other part of me is grabbing my popcorn and excited to see what happens and watch the world burn. But anyway, and yeah, then it gives an episode outline, the legacy of Rolex and Moser, iconic models, craftsmanship and innovation, the collector's perspective. Why on earth am I wasting time putting podcasts together week after week trying to come up with these ideas when I can just spit them into ChatGPT? No problem. You get a much more uniform, organized podcast than what I give you every week. Oh, gosh. It's scary stuff. Anyway, so I thought it might be fun to get the ownership perspective of Rolex and Moser from ChatGPT versus my experiences owning the two brands. So I put a few things into ChatGPT and I want to read them to you. And then I will sort of give my counter opinion, if you will. Now, I fact checked everything ChatGPT told me and it's scarily accurate. I know, I think WatchArtSci, he has done videos on how inaccurate some of the responses have been, movements in certain high horology pieces and stuff like that. just typing in rudimentary searches like I did here about the Rolex Air King and the Moser Endeavor center seconds, and then just Rolex and Moser in general, dead on accurate. Didn't really have to do any changing to what they said. So I put in to ChatGPT owning Rolex versus owning H, Moser, and C. And here's what ChatGPT had to say. Owning a Rolex and owning an H, Moser, and C are both prestigious choices in the world of luxury watches, but they offer different experiences and styles. Here are some points to consider about each brand. Rolex. Heritage and recognition. Rolex is one of the most well-known and iconic luxury watch brands globally. It has a rich history dating back over a century and is synonymous with luxury, precision, and durability. Resale value. Rolex watches tend to hold their value well over time, and some models even appreciate in value due to their popularity and limited availability. Diverse collection. Rolex offers a wide range of models to suit different tastes and preferences, from sporty to classic designs. They are known for their robustness and functionality, with popular models like the Submariner, Daytona, and Datejust. Status symbol. Rolex watches have become status symbols and are often associated with success and achievement. Wearing a Rolex can make a statement about your personal style and accomplishment. Pretty dead on, right? I can't argue with anything ChatGPT said there. All right, H, Moser, and C. Here's what it had to say about that. Exquisite craftsmanship. H. Moser & C is a Swiss luxury watch brand that focuses on traditional watchmaking techniques and craftsmanship. They are known for their attention to detail and high-quality finishing, often featuring intricate movements and complications. Independent brand. H. Moser & C is an independent brand, which means they have more freedom to create unique and limited edition timepieces. This exclusivity can appeal to collectors looking for something more distinctive and rare. Understated elegance. H. Moser and C watches often have a minimalist and refined design aesthetic. They prioritize clean lines and simplicity, with a focus on the quality of materials and finishing rather than flashy branding. Horological innovations. H. Moser and C has gained a reputation for its innovative approach to watchmaking. They have introduced interesting features like their Fume dials. Mine has the funky blue. Looks crazy different in just about every light source imaginable. It's awesome. Okay, they have introduced interesting features like their Fume dials, which exhibit gradient color patterns and their interchangeable escapements. Ultimately, the choice between owning a Rolex or an H. Moser & C comes down to personal preference, style, and the kind of statement you want to make with your timepiece. Both brands offer exceptional quality and craftsmanship, but Rolex is often seen as a more mainstream and recognizable choice, while H. Moser & C appeals to collectors and connoisseurs seeking exclusivity and understated elegance. I mean, does that not explain both brands to a T? That has really been my ownership experience. So I'll put it to you this way. Let's say the whole watch industry is a musician, a rock band. Okay? You go to see a concert, your favorite band. Let's just pick Metallica, because they're one of my favorite bands. I haven't always been on board with everything they've done, but I respect their ability to take chances and go a little left of center when fans want them to stay in this lane. They kind of veer off. I respect it. I haven't enjoyed all of it, but I respect it. Okay? So, when the average person goes to a Metallica show, they're a casual fan. They want to hear the hits, right? They want to hear Enter Sandman, Nothing Else Matters, and so on and so forth, right? But as a hardcore fan, for many, many years, I'll get a beer during those songs. But when they play Trapped Under Ice or Leper Messiah, then is when I get really excited. I'm also a big Queen fan. You know, Freddie Mercury's been dead for a long time, but they're touring again with Adam Lambert. I've never seen that show. But again, there's a lot of casual Queen fans, especially with the Bohemian Rhapsody movie and all of that, right? So most people when they go to a Queen show, want to hear the hits. And Queen has many. Bohemian Rhapsody, We Are the Champions, Somebody to Love, We Will Rock You, Another One Bites the Dust. If I never hear any of those songs again in my entire life, it will be too soon, right? I want to hear, if they played Queen 2 in its entirety, that album, then as a hardcore Queen fan who loves the deep tracks, that gets me excited, right? When they play March of the Black Queen or something like Now I'm Here or something like that, that's what gets me excited as a real fan. And that's what I equate watches to, and especially these two brands. If the watch hobby or watches in general are Metallica, Rolex is the Enter Sandman. Moser is the Trapped Under Ice, the Ride the Lightning, right? That's probably my favorite Metallica album. Many will say Master of Puppets, but Ride the Lightning for me is probably my favorite. Call of Cthulhu, all of these. So yeah, Rolex is a mainstream choice. They make solid watches. And again, that marketing has established them as the pinnacle of wealth and success and accomplishment, just like ChatGPT said. Moser, on the other hand, flies under the radar to the average person. You know, watch robberies are up, right? My watch doesn't even have the name of the brand on it at all. You have to flip the watch over to the case back to know it's made by H. Moser & C. Completely sterile dial. So if somebody is looking to rob me, they might just think I'm wearing a Movado or something, right? Kind of looks like a fancy Movado. But, you know, if somebody knows what they're looking for and I'm wearing my Air King, it could be a target, right? So then I asked ChatGPT about these two watches specifically, the Air King and the Moser Endeavor Center Seconds. And here's what it has to say. Rolex Air King. The Air King has a classic and sporty design featuring a stainless steel case, a clean dial with contrasting hour markers, and the iconic Rolex Crown logo. It embodies a tool watch aesthetic and is often associated with aviation. The Moser Endeavor Center Seconds Concept Funky Blue. Moser watches, including the Endeavor Center Seconds Concept Funky Blue, are known for their minimalist and modern design. This particular model features a stunning funky blue fume dial with elegant hour markers housed in a polished stainless steel case. All right, that's where it's wrong. It's wrong there. I have no hour markers, no seconds track, no nothing on this watch. Now, there are different variations, but the one I have, and I tried to put the, I put the model number in and everything, so it did get that wrong. So not 100% foolproof. Interesting. All right. It also gets the movement for the Air King wrong. It says it has the 3131. It actually has the 3230. It does get the movement in the Moser Endeavor Center Seconds correct, the HMC 200, which is, it's a great movement. 72 hours of power reserve, shockproof. That's why I have no problem wearing a white gold dress watch to do things like hiking with my dogs in the woods, because it's a shockproof movement. It can handle it. And then it just goes on a little bit more about resale value and all that. So yeah, it does get a few things wrong here. Here's what I can say about owning these two watches, okay? We joke about how Rolex used to make tool watches, and now they're a luxury item. I agree and I disagree, especially when it comes to having a two-watch rotation with an Air King and a high horology white gold H. Moser & C. that retails for $25,000. Now, I did not pay that. I bought it for much less on the pre-owned market, right? But when you're rotating between those two, the Air King is about the best tool watch in the world. No fear of wearing it to do just about anything. It is so comfortable. It is so easy to wear. This Moser, on the other hand, is scratching an entirely different itch for me. This is my appreciation of art in a watch. The Air King and Rolex watches in general are superlative chronometers. They keep excellent time. When you are buying a Rolex watch, you know that it is going to be pretty near dead on accurate. -2 to +2 seconds per day. In my wearing experiences over a few different Rolex models, they keep even better time than that. almost like a quartz watch, right? That kind of accuracy. If you wear it regularly all day, every day, it's pretty much going to be dead on. Scary accurate. The Moser Endeavor Center Seconds that I have is a completely different animal, right? Beautifully decorated movement. I mean, amazingly beautiful. You can see it. And using high-end materials. My Moser is completely white gold. It's a white gold case. The rotor, if you turn it around, is made of red gold. I mean, this is luxury. This is a whole other ball of wax. There is nothing on the dial whatsoever, like I've said. No minute markers, no seconds track, no branding, no Swiss made. Moser got away from that years ago because they honestly felt like it doesn't really mean anything. Only 60% of a watch has to be made in Switzerland or have Swiss parts to be qualified as Swiss made. A lot of brands put that on the dial, and maybe they shouldn't, right? So, yeah, so Moser did away with it completely. No branding at all. The funky blue Fume dial is stunningly gorgeous. Whenever I post a picture of this watch online or on our Discord chat, everybody says, wow, it looks like a completely different watch. If you are in direct light, it has a sunburst effect. If I am in a dark room, it has almost like a magic ball crystal orb effect. It's crazy. So it speaks to me on a different level than, you know, my Tooltastic Rolex Air King, which really isn't Tooltastic, but again, when comparing these two watches, it certainly is, right? So, and I think that's why you buy Moser. You buy luxury, extreme luxury, like H. Moser and C, or Grubel Forcy, Laurent Ferrier, whatever the case might be, De Betun. You buy these not because you want a high accuracy timepiece, because you are interested in exploring the art side and just the amazing attention to detail and the engineering and the high-end materials that those brands offer versus maybe with a Rolex. I mean, Rolex certainly gives you that, right? They have white gold, they have yellow gold, they use, you know, precious metals, they use diamonds, rubies, and all that on the Rainbow, Daytona, and all that. But for the most part, they're more industrial, whereas the Moser is the complete opposite of that. So that's why I love having both, and that's why I'm super content right now. Because I have a great tool watch in the Rolex, whether you think Rolex is a tool watch or not. To me, in my rotation, it is my tool watch. It is the tool watch. And then I have the other side. It's like having two cars, right? Having a Camry to do my everyday driving in. And then having a supercar. I don't really know supercars, but I'm just going to say it generically. Having a supercar to use on the weekends or when I go out at night or whatever the case might be. So that's what I have in my collection right now. It suits me so well. Like I said, I'm more content in the hobby than I ever have been. Now, there are two different materials. That's the last thing I asked GPT about, because I am discovering that white gold is, and I knew this already going in, I did my research, but white gold is a pretty soft material. Now, for the last 2 months, I've owned the Moser for over 2 months now. I've pretty much worn it every day. I switch off with that in the Air King, but there are several days where I wear both of them. And I've done things in it. I've lived my life in it. I want a watch that I don't have to be afraid to wear. So, hey, the Moser and my leather band, I take it to the woods. I haven't switched out the strap yet. It's still the OEM strap. I wear it, and I don't care. It's my watch, and I want it to reflect the fact that I wear it. It's the most expensive watch I've ever owned, and I did not buy it to sit and look pretty in the wash box. I bought it to wear it, damn it. So I asked ChatGPT about the differences between white gold and Rolex's 904L stainless steel alloy that they use for their watches. And here is what ChatGPT had to say. White gold watches are a popular choice for those who appreciate luxury and elegance. White gold is an alloy composed of gold and other white metals such as palladium, silver, or nickel. It has a silvery white color resembling platinum and is often used in high-end jewelry and timepieces. White gold watches come in various styles, designs, and price ranges to cater to different tastes and budgets. Many luxury watch brands offer white gold versions of their popular models, featuring intricate detailing, craftsmanship, and often adorned with diamonds or other precious stones. One advantage of white gold watches is their versatility, as the neutral color complements a wide range of outfits and occasions. They can be worn casually or paired with formal attire, making them suitable for both everyday wear and special events. It's worth noting that white gold watches may require periodic maintenance to preserve their appearance. Over time, the rhodium plating, which gives white gold its bright and shiny finish, may wear off and require replating to maintain its original luster. Yeah, so I'm noticing that. Basically, the bezel and the lugs and a bit of the sides of the case of this watch are completely polished. And while from a distance and in certain lighting, it still looks beautifully polished. I mean, if the light catches it just right, I mean, it's stunning. But if you were to really analyze that watch, it has a lot of scratches. No major chips or dings or anything like that. But with the rhodium plating, I think that's going to probably be an issue at some point. Still, it does not deter me from wanting to keep this watch for the entirety of my life. I want it to be something that I own 20, 30 years from now. I have proven to move on from watches fairly fast, unfortunately, but I'm hoping this one sticks around. And, you know, if I need to get it replated at some point, we'll cross that bridge, but there will be a certain satisfaction that I wore that watch enough for that to be needed. And I think that will give me pride. And that's how I love to wear my watches, the old wabi-sabi look, right? And real quick, Rolex 904L stainless steel. Rolex 904L stainless steel is a type of stainless steel alloy used by Rolex in the manufacturing of their watch cases and bracelets. Stainless steel is a popular choice for watchmaking due to its durability, corrosion resistance, and attractive appearance. Rolex specifically uses 904L stainless steel, which is known for its high resistance to corrosion and its ability to maintain a polished finish. Compared to the more common 316L stainless steel used in many other watch brands, Rolex's use of 904L stainless steel sets them apart. The main advantage of 904L stainless steel is its increased resistance to corrosion, particularly in harsh environments. It is more resistant to acids, such as those found in sweat and seawater, making it an ideal choice for sports watches and diving watches. The use of 904L stainless steel also allows Rolex to achieve a distinct and luxurious appearance for their watch cases. The steel has a unique luster and is often polished to a high shine, giving Rolex watches their recognizable aesthetic. And I have found that too. It looks whiter. It's very similar to, I've owned some Seiko Everbrilliant steel watches, and they have a whiter look. Everbrilliant steel looks even a little bit whiter than 904L. I have also found it to scratch fairly easily. You know, if you look at your Rolex watches, I mean, I have an Air King, very little polish on it, just really on the sides of the case, otherwise, and sides of the links and stuff like that. Otherwise, it's mostly brushed. I mean, again, I wear my watches, right? And especially now that I'm only wearing two, there's a lot of scratches on the Air King, a lot. And that's pretty common. I think most people who have Rolex watches will tell you that they do scratch a little bit easier, but also they buff out easier. From what I've told, I've never had a watch polished. I never want to, unless, like, you know, the functionality of the watch depends on it. The Air King and the Moser, knock on wood, whatever, are lifetime watches for me. If I get another Rolex, who knows? You know, I'm on the list for the Yachtmaster apparently, but that watch, from all accounts, will be as elusive as the Panda Daytona and the Pepsi GMT Master 2, right? So I have no idea if I'm ever getting that watch. But these are my watches. I find it exciting to, you know, in a couple years even, be known as the guy who wears two watches. I'm not a one watch guy, but I can be a two watch guy. Other watches will come, and I'm sure other watches will go. Maybe I'll be known as the guy who wears the Air King, the Moser, and collects crazy Seiko quartz. That'd be okay, right? Because I still have a little bit of variety, but not overwhelmed by choice. So I don't know what I can say in summary. Owning these two brands has really gotten me to where I've always wanted to be in the hobby, I think. I have a killer 1-2 punch that, and I don't care what people on the outside think. I really, you know, we all care to a certain point, but ultimately I wear what I want to wear because people online are sure going to comment when I put pictures up and all that kind of stuff. But otherwise, I don't think about them any other time of the day when I'm wearing my watches, or I don't really consider Instagram. I used to really post on Instagram a lot and wear watches accordingly to Instagram posts. I'll post on there maybe once a week if I think my watch looks good and the lighting's right outside. I'll take a picture and post it up on Instagram. But otherwise, I just don't care anymore. I don't want to live my life governed by what I should wear because of Instagram posts. I just don't want to do that. So ultimately, I'm in a really good place with my collection. It could change tomorrow. A watch could be released today, later today, that blows my mind and blows the whole thing up. But right now, this moment in time, these two watches are my jam. So anyway, I hope this was a fun episode. ChatGPT, man, it's a scary thing. It's a scary thing, but I thank it for helping me to put this episode together. That was fun. also, remember, every Sunday night on the Bobby Legs YouTube channel, Watch Soup. I'm not sure if we will continue the podcast at this point, but probably. we've been talking about whether we should. It only gets a few downloads a week, and it does cost money to put these things out, believe it or not. So we're debating that, but it will always be every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Bobby Legs YouTube channel with my great co-host Bobby Legs and Sanjay. I guess we should say we're the co-host to Bobby Legs. But anyway, guest episodes for the next 5 or 6, I promise. Thank you for putting up with another episode of Just Me. You know I appreciate it. And remember, sometimes you're the dog, sometimes you are the hydrant, but at least you are outside. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Watch Dang podcast. See you later.